Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right, we're back here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, Ira Work, Evan Barnard. Okay, guys, out of the 20 questions that we ask and tell people that you ought to know the answer to these questions. This is a tough question. I shouldn't ask you this. Which one's most important? Out of the 20 questions.
Which one is most important?
Which one is most important? So you got questions.
Well, I would either go with one or 20.
Well, you got true purpose for money is obviously one. Do you know what? Because money is just a tool to express what's valuable to you. Are you aware of mental biases and blind spots is another question. And are you invested in the market? You know, the three warning signs you may be speculating and gambling. Yeah, there's a lot of things in there, but there's one question that really gets me because I find that if I could get somebody to get this, then they would be interested in all the other 19 questions.
Are you ready to shift?
No.
That was my answer, was number 20. If you're not willing to change, the other 19 don't matter.
Yeah, but you'd be willing to change if you knew the answer to this one question that's in my mind. And that is, do you know how to judge whether your portfolio is doing what it ought to be doing? That's my paraphrase of it.
Ah.
Because I find so often when I get in conversations with people, it's, I'm making money and doing this.
I'm doing good.
I got this return on this thing here. And then what I have to get through to them is that, you have no idea how many people had $100,000 in the 1970s and they don't have $50 million today. you have no idea about how many people have underperformed what various markets have all around the world. They've made money, but they are so far short of what they should have gotten at relative losses. And that is why I think most people aren't ready to shift what they're doing. They're not ready to, they don't care about, whether they have mental blind spots. If they're making money, it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? See where I'm going with that? It's kind
of
where...
Sort of. Yeah.
I think that is what happens so often is people end up in retirement with a fraction of what they should have. We know this from research.
Right.
We know this from the Dalbar research that the returns that investors have gotten in equity markets and stock markets are positive. But they're far below what markets have delivered, number one. And you look at the asset allocation investor, they're barely, they're around inflation,
They barely keep pace with inflation.
Yeah. And so hence, I look at that and go, that seems to me to be the most important thing. If I'm training a financial person, the people that I'm talking to, I like to talk to in the younger people that are coming on board at the company here, that's typically what I'm telling. The first thing that you do with somebody is you show them how to look at their portfolio because you don't want them blindly trusting you. You want them looking at their investment statement, looking at the funds that they own, and looking at how they did versus the area of the market that is in question. If you have a fund that's investing in large blend stocks, how did it do versus the S&P 500? If you've got a fund that's investing in small U.S. stocks, how did it do versus the Russell 2000? If you have a fund that's investing in international large companies, how did it do versus the Europe, Australia, Far East index? Europe, Australia, Far East, small for small caps and the small value for international small value. And that is, to me, that motivates people to do the rest of it. That motivates people to find out about their blind spots. It motivates people to find out about the Markowitz efficient frontier, Nobel Prize winning. It motivates people to understand what an investment policy statement is, for example, all of those different things.
Yeah.
You've got to get them to motivate them. And to me, that's the number one most important question. I don't know, random thoughts I was having today.
Yeah. I find math is a powerful one in that conversation as well. Mm-hmm. Because, and that's not one of the 20 questions, but in terms of getting the light bulb to turn on, particularly with younger investors, mm-hmm. is, and I had this conversation with Navy Sun years ago, mm-hmm. and it's the power of compounding. Mm-hmm. And what struck me was when you said, you know, how many people that had 100,000 in the 70s have 50 million now?
Yeah.
And if you look at some of those numbers, that's about what it would be in the S&P right. or, you know, small value
well,
or something.
That was a diversified portfolio is what I was quoting there. You know, large, small, and, large value, small value, international, large, international, small.
But it's the same like thing is if they spent 10,000 of that on something mm-hmm. in 1970, that cost them $10 million.
Yeah.
And I find that argument is as powerful as in terms of getting someone to say, oh, you know, that compounding works both ways. I either cost myself $10 million for this purchase or, hey, I really can get ahead if all I'm putting is $300, $400 a month away. I can actually get there. Mm-hmm. That's it. Once it's believable, like your, the test that you – not a test, but the study where people looked at pictures of themselves age 30 years, and mm-hmm. then they realized, mm-hmm. oh, I got to save for that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people, they don't see themselves in the future. Yeah, they can't even imagine themselves. So therefore, spending a certain amount of money that will make them forego money in the future doesn't enter their minds.
I had somebody in the chat this week. And they basically, they did very, very well putting money away. Mm-hmm. Just with regular jobs. And I say regular jobs, you know $60,000, $70,000 a year jobs. Mm-hmm. Accumulated over $5 million. Mm-hmm. But they did it by spending less than they earned and putting that money away. And that's the problem with, I think, society today. We live in an instant gratification society. Mm-hmm. We want our fast food. We want mm-hmm. our computers to be faster. We just want so much. And nobody is thinking, wow, money is built slowly. Mm-hmm. Yes, you have to have the right returns. You have to have the diversified portfolio.
And that was that one article that I talked about here on the show that one day is like, this is surprisingly... That's the funny thing about that article title. Surprisingly, this is the most important thing. And it was talking about capturing market returns and actually, the return and how the portfolio is designed. And, you know, so I look at that and go, well, you know, if you look at portfolio design in this, I'm going back 54 years, that rate of return that I just went mm-hmm. through.
Yeah.
If you actually got the rate of return, that what is the Dalbar number as far as what's the 30-year
result?
For
the average investor?
Yeah.
It's between 9 and 10%.
No, that.
No, not the market. But it's like 4.
If you go back that far, it's like 4.2.
Yeah. So let's use 4. Instead of 50 million, that's 831,000. It's less than 1 million.
Yeah.
You know, so you look at the difference between them and go, wow, that's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hence, I think that's the problem so often is people may be making returns. It grew. It's 10 times the amount of money in my example almost. But it's a fraction of what it should have been. And therefore, what happens is most people don't recognize that all the rest of the questions that we asked in that is, you know, do you know the three warning signs? Like one of the warning signs happens to be something Kathy Wood. You were talking about that just before
stock
the break.
Stock picking, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Talk about Kathy Wood. You made a comment. And it's the funniest thing because I remember somebody texting me a while back while I was on the show. And he said, hey, Paul, you know, anything about, you know, Kathy Wood and ARK Investments? And asked me that. And I texted him back and I said, stock picking, market timing, don't pay any attention to it.
Right.
Well, that was before she had her great fall from grace.
So that call was at least 6 years ago.
It was. Yes, it was. It was. And what happened, it was this, she was all the news.
Right.
Now what's the
news? Well, yeah, you probably got that call about her peak.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, this article came out of Morningstar, and it just says ARK's Kathy Wood on Tesla, AI, and Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And they're wanting to get her input on artificial intelligence and electric vehicles and prospects in Europe, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And it just struck me because while I was doing some research for that, I just pulled up all of her funds.
Yeah.
You know, and all but two, I believe, most are negative for the last 5 years. They're negative.
Wow.
And that was even with a huge spike in 23. They're still negative for 5 years.
That's horrible.
And but yet, you know, kind of like Carrie Dent, her reputation was strong enough 6 years ago that either they keep, you know, hoping that she'll have a comeback and then they're mm-hmm. the people promoting it.
Wow.
But
her, like Bill Miller.
She has not had the ability to pick stocks in the last 6 years anyway.
But you would never know that from all of her Facebook ads.
Well, a lot of those are scams.
Well, I'm just saying.
Oh, I don't even know about it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things, and they could very well be scams.
They're scams. What are you talking about? I don't even know what you guys are talking about. What are you referring to?
Well, I see a lot of Facebook ads talking about how great she has done and why you should be in those funds. Now, I go right past them.
Uh-huh.
I haven't looked deep into them, but I would think that, you know, that would suck a lot of people in to put money into her funds.
Well, yeah. And you listen to, you know, you're talking about they ask her about these things. And she probably has an opinion. I don't want to pick on her too much, but she probably has an opinion that would be valid about the possibility of what the future might be in some of these technologies. But the issue is, can you use that information to get higher returns through the brilliance of knowing those things? Because the reality of it is a lot of people have a lot of knowledge about these areas.
Yeah. I'll give an example of one of her quotes. You know, because when you listen to it, it sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of the exercises that we do in the American Dream Experience.
Uh-huh.
Have people listen to this news clip and write down how many buzzwords, how many weasel words are in the clip.
Yeah. Yeah, and, there are predictions about the future.
She says, well, Valerio, if we're correct that interest rates have peaked globally, they're already starting to come down in the rest of the world. The U.S. will lag just as it did on the way up. We think that's going to be a very good environment for thematic investing. Last year, it was a very good year on balance for thematic investing, but we're seeing some seesaws as fears about inflation and interest rates continue. We think they will resolve toward lower interest rates and much lower than expected inflation. Great for thematic.
Okay, so define for everybody in Evan the weasel words in there so they know what you're talking about.
So certainly think, anytime we think that's going to be good or we think interest rates will be lower, that's a weasel word.
You're giving yourself an out.
Yeah, for sure. And even at the start.
If it's wrong, I just said I thought it was going to happen. I didn't guarantee it would happen, right?
Yeah, she started that whole paragraph with, if we are correct.
Yeah, there you
like,
go. Uh-huh.
And if you're not correct, I just lost 32%. No big deal.
Yeah, right. I can retire 30 years from now.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, what's your view of EVs? We think, you know, we anticipate EV sales will grow to 10 million units globally and 74 million units by 2030.
Okay. So stop there. We think that they're going to grow to what? 10 million?
10 million units in 2023.
Okay. So here's the point. She may be dead on right.
Yes.
It may be exactly that, nailed, that they grow to 10 million units. But who is to say that that information already isn't priced in?
Right.
Is the point. Everybody makes predictions. That's where people get a little bit confused on this, I think, is they hear a prediction about the future and they say, well, this person's really, really smart. They predicted the last thing, you know, very well. And this is what all they do is they study this. But there is a big jump, a big leap to go from somebody predicting something economically happening in 5-10 years versus the investments that we make not having that already priced in and making higher returns. I'll never forget a guy coming to my office one day, and he was talking about a guy. He says, this guy would be great in your business, Paul. And I said, he's a young kid.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, why? And he says, well, he's phenomenal. He can go in and analyze a company. He can tell them what their sales are likely to be in 3 years, 4 years, and how they, you know, and he can predict all of these things. He would be great in your business. I said, it'd be terrible. And he goes, why? And then I explained that to him. I said, because You're making a prediction. A lot of people make that predictions. You may have a ton of people that come out, and they may have predictions about the future, but they can't predict when some crazy people are going to take an airplane and run it into a building. They don't know that. They don't know when all of a sudden oil prices are going to shoot up, and all of a sudden, you know, that changes the whole landscape. They right. don't know when somebody's going to go to war and shoot and lob missiles from one place to another, or when the currency is going to collapse or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, well, you know, we did a myths presentation out for the Dixon office. Okay. We did our first education
oh.
event.
Oh, yeah. Out of Dixon. Out there. Yeah, sure.
And, you know, I'm just thinking about the Rex Singfeld video that we
mm-hmm.
play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he says, you know, he's talking about the efficiency of the market. And yeah. he says, it's possible that someone may have a little bit more information, but do they have more information than the 8 billion people? No, they have a small fraction of what can be known. You know,
that is exactly
and
right. It's a
it's
great
not
line.
That they're all stupid.
Yes, that's
it's
correct.
That they're all incredibly intelligent.
That is it's exactly the opposite. You're right. Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Every one of the offices is run by somebody with 20-plus years experience. They're all degree planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call. And we look forward to seeing you soon. All right, we are back here on the Investor Coaching Show. I am Paul Winkler. He's Evan Barnard and Mr. Ira Work hanging out, talking about money, investing. And Evan, what? Just throw it at me, man. Come on, something else. Something else, whatever. If you want to talk about OJ, you can talk about OJ.
Or, oh, we'll save that for next time.
Okay, hour. You want to save that? Okay,
oh, no.
All right. Oh, no. No, that's no glory.
That's right. This was an interesting one, and I think this was out of Bloomberg.
Uh-huh.
And this is, it's now becoming it's not enough data points to say it's a trend, to be honest, but
okay.
It's that they're going that direction. Netflix joins Apple and Meta in withholding key data from investors.
Oh, well, wait a minute. Public companies withholding data
from investors.
From investors.
Right. And so, you know, accounting principles and SEC, and you know, we talked earlier about there's a lot of regulations and so forth.
Okay.
But there's still there's a lot of numbers that aren't necessarily a requirement under the law. It's just been a practice over the years to provide all of this information,
mm-hmm.
which keeps the market incredibly efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening is many of these tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
are starting to not report on their subscriber base. You know, they're still reporting on profit. They're still reporting on revenue.
Is this seen as legal that they can withhold this information?
Yeah, no one's challenged it yet.
Nobody's challenged it yet.
I mean, investors are frustrated, and I would imagine at some point the market will correct this itself, and enough, you know, trillions of funds ownership
mm-hmm.
will say, you better start releasing this information or something.
Well, so the reason this is so important is because we want to, you know, if you go back to the 1930s, prior to the 1930s, yeah. and you didn't have a lot of information, people would buy things and they don't really know if they're paying a fair price.
Right.
Now, if you look at how when people engage in a lot of movement of their money, buying and selling and trading and doing all of that, who is at the most risk for this lack of information, who would you say would be at the most risk as far as investors? What's that?
It's the individual investor buying stocks.
The individual investor engaging in that activity. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely, Ira. That's exactly right.
But you know,
so you look at that, and it's another screaming reason to do what right. we teach here on this show.
So in one of the sessions that we teach in the American Dream Experience, we talk about just this thing, mm-hmm. that all the information that we think we know about a stock, about a company, right. is just theoretical.
Right.
Because you don't even know if the information you're getting mm-hmm. is reliable.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thought Enron was like the darling of Wall Street.
Right, sure.
And unfortunately—
Or how about Global Crossing?
But with Enron, the accountants themselves were cooking the books.
Right.
And what they were reporting.
Oh, I remember an accountant that had been with the accounting firm. And when the accounting firm, when the head of the accounting firm was leaving employment there, which was his namesake accounting firm, he said, I've always run this place with the utmost integrity. I can't say the same for the people that are coming after me. And he said, you could hear a pin drop.
Wow.
In his retirement speech. No joke. Yeah. Real stuff.
Man.
So, yeah. And this is so important because if we think about, as an investor, man, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And you're buying and selling this stuff and you're even lacking even more information. Kind of tough going.
Well, and that was kind of a key metric. It says, you know, following management's decision to stop reporting quarterly subscriber data, the metric has long been the primary way Wall Street evaluated the company's performance. But executives at Netflix, which now has almost 270 million subscribers, have tried to shift the focus to measures like sales and profit. And other tech giants like Apple and Meta and so forth have taken similar steps. And, you know, there's claiming that subscriber numbers have been wildly unpredictable and the company has trouble forecasting them, which is another argument for mm-hmm. not stock picking. If the company can't forecast their earnings, how is some stock picker supposed to forecast their earnings?
Oh, for sure.
But the stock did take a dive when they some of this was related to their earnings decrease. But when they said they're going to stop reporting customer numbers, the market dropped a little bit for them.
Yeah. And this is also another screaming reason not to get overly concentrated in certain sectors or asset classes, because technology companies are what we're talking about here. And that could be a big problem for you if you're very concentrated in that area, as so many people are unknowingly.
Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.